Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. My name is Mike Cutler, and I welcome you all to my program, the Michael Cutler Hour. I hope you've all had a good week. It's certainly a pleasure to join you. For those of you who perhaps are listening for the first time, just to briefly fill you in, I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And immigration, as I often tell folks, is not a single issue, but rather it's a singular issue because it impacts virtually every challenge, every threat, every issue that confronts our nation and our citizens today. It impacts significantly national security, criminal justice and community safety, the economy, the environment, health care, education, unemployment rates, you name it. It's getting hammered because for decades, politicians from both sides of the political aisle, this isn't one side or the other, this is a perfect storm, folks. We've had Democrats and Republicans, perhaps for different reasons, but with the same goal in mind, to keep our borders open, to not impede the flow of illegal aliens into our country, and to go after the goals that they want, never mind the damage that it does to our nation or to our citizens. And I want to be clear, this is not a statement of xenophobia. It's a statement of reality. My own mother was an immigrant. My dad's parents were immigrants. The problem isn't with having people immigrate to the United States lawfully, if, in fact, the system had integrity, and it does not. Let's be clear about it. I'm going to discuss that a little bit later on this evening. But it's also the fact that we now have within our country arguably tens of millions of illegal aliens. I don't accept that figure of 11 or 12 million. I think that's a fantasy. I think we probably have two or three or more times as many illegals as the government in many of the number crunches would tell us. And these are folks whose identities often are unknown and unknowable. Therefore, we know nothing about their backgrounds or their intentions or their affiliations, and this poses a huge threat. And if you have any doubt about why we have immigration laws, I just read a statement by Janet Napolitano, the head of DHS, the Department of, as I call it, Homeland Security, said, well, the people that are getting employment authorization, they've technically violated the laws. No, Janet Napolitano, they have not technically violated the laws. They have violated the laws, period, end of sentence. And those laws, folks, you should know, are designed to protect our country and our citizens. And I don't want to get heavily into law because this isn't a class on law, but we do have to have the facts. And while the other side uses artful language and all kinds of fuzzy alleged logic, and there is no logic, look at Title 8, United States Code, Section 212. You can just punch it into Google. You can go to my website, michaelcutler.net. You can look for the articles that I've written about this, because Title 8, United States Code, Section 212, focuses on the categories of aliens who are supposed to be kept out of our country. And going back to the origins of Ellis Island, which was, of course, a quarantine station, never mind the lamentations of the open borders crowd who whine, oh, my God, they've closed Ellis Island. I assure you, if we reopened it, if the government reopened it, they'd be the first ones to scream bloody murder because it was a quarantine station, and it was as secure a facility on the East Coast as Alcatraz was on the West Coast. But that section of law deals with aliens with communicable diseases, aliens who have mental illness and are prone to violence, or the sex offenders, the pedophiles, the rapists, and so forth, criminal aliens, fugitives from justice, aliens who are human traffickers and drug smugglers, money launderers involved with prostitution, involved with violent gangs, aliens who have committed human rights violations and war crimes, aliens who may be involved with terrorism or espionage, and we work our way down to aliens who would come here to work illegally. And at a time when so many millions of Americans are either unemployed or underemployed, this is not inconsequential. You know, there's an interesting piece that ran just about 2 weeks ago on 60 Minutes where Jeff Immelt, the head, the CEO of General Electric, was interviewed at length. And he conceded that GE is an international company, that he's a globalist. You know, he said, I'm an American, but yes, I'm also a globalist. Well, you can't be both, quite frankly. Because if you look at what globalism does, it seeks to take down the borders of countries. You cannot win the war on drugs or terror when you have no borders to protect your country or your citizens. The equivalent is a homeowner who's worried about burglaries, but then takes the door off the hinges to his house. That's not going to work, folks. So we certainly have to deal with other countries. We certainly live in a global environment. But if you're truly an internationalist, a globalist, then your goal is to remove the borders. And once you do that, we've got serious problems, because go back to what the laws are supposed to do. They're supposed to keep people out of our country whose presence is harmful. By the way, you've no doubt noticed that I use the word alien. The other side gets very upset with that word. Oh my gosh, you can't say alien. It's a pejorative. It's a derogatory word. It's a word of bigotry. They've used all these phrases when I've debated these folks on TV, radio, and elsewhere. In point of fact, the word alien is a legal term, and the definition of alien under our laws simply means any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. And I defy anybody to tell me where the insult is. The problem for the immigration anarchists is that the term alien provides clarity to the discussion. It provides clarity to the debate. And if you know you're pushing a point of view that is not substantiated by facts, not substantiated by common sense, not substantiated by the law or by morality, what are you left with? You're left with a war of words and propaganda. So they started to call illegal aliens undocumented immigrants. Now, why did they do that? So they could say, well, look, we are a nation of immigrants, so let me provide a bit more clarity. The difference between an illegal alien and an immigrant is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. We all love to have company stop by, but not when people climb through our bedroom windows at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's the issue. That's the distinction. It's the game of may I. And it's not simply a formality. Because, again, at the beginning of my career, which began just over 40 years ago, it's kind of daunting to think that I've been at it for so darn long, but I started as an inspector. And my job was to keep aliens out of our country whose presence would be harmful. That's the reason we have that inspections process. And I want you to think about a little contrast. And by the way, if you want to call in and join the conversation, the phone number to call is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. And discourse and debate and discussion is healthy. It's a part of our tradition. It's about the First Amendment, not just freedom of speech, freedom of press, and freedom of religion, but about the right to peaceably assemble. Because the idea is to have those conversations so we come to better understandings. So what you really need to understand is that if we can't secure the borders, if we can't deal with all these issues, we've got a serious problem. We wind up undercutting American workers. We wind up making it increasingly impossible for Americans to get the jobs and support themselves and their families. And in fact, before the Second World War, immigration was the responsibility of the Labor Department. Most people don't know this, because the Labor Department understood the relationship between an influx of vast numbers of foreign workers and the harm that it would have on the American workforce. And back then, in the early 1940s, late 1930s, you know, the greatest generation, they understood that the government's role, the government's mission, was to look out for the well-being of our nation and our citizens. So anyway, let's turn to Jack Welch. There he is on 60 Minutes being interviewed. And what does Jack Welch say? Jack Welch admitted that if he posts 1,000 jobs that pay between $15 and $17 per hour, boy, what a princely sum. Nobody can aspire to being in the middle class on a $15 or a $17 or a $20 an hour job, not in this country, not in this economy. And I don't care where you live. That is not enough money to get your share of the American dream, folks, unless you're planning to have three jobs. So anyway, he said that if he posts those jobs, 1,000 jobs, he gets 50,000 applications. And meanwhile, the politicians stand there saying, oh, the illegals do the work Americans won't do. Well, if Jack Welch can post 1,000 job positions and wind up with 50,000 applicants, you tell me that Americans won't do the work. And here's a statistic I want you to think about. Immigration and Customs Enforcement right now has roughly 7,000 enforcement personnel, agents, out there enforcing the laws. But it's not only the immigration laws. They also enforce the customs laws. And the great majority of the bosses at ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, came from legacy customs. And there's a world of difference between customs and immigration. Customs, before the creation of the Department of Homeland Surrender, was under the Treasury Department. Immigration was under the Justice Department. The mission of customs back then was to collect tariffs and duties and keep contraband out of the United States. What they did was most closely related to what they do at the IRS and the Commerce Department. Immigration was under the Justice Department because the work that immigration agents did was most closely aligned with what they do at the FBI and the Labor Department. So you could see that there's this big gap between what these two agencies did. So they took these two agencies. The only thing that they shared in common was they both had border responsibilities, and they smushed them together, put lots of customs bosses in charge. In fact, I've testified before congressional hearings where I referred to this process of building these unwieldy empires under DHS as the customization of immigration law enforcement, because you had ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that has customs in it and other agencies. And then you had CBP, Customs and Border Protection, and that's where the inspectors are, that's where the Border Patrol now is. And then they have USCIS, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. So they sliced it, they diced it, and they made certain that interoperability would be a huge problem, that they would dilute the efforts to enforce the immigration laws. So right now, you're lucky if 3,000 ICE agents are actually out there for the whole country. 3,000. They estimate millions of illegal aliens. And in fact, if you look at visa violators, people who are admitted under the visa program or visa waiver program, another insane program, the government says there's about 5 million visa violators. I've been told by folks in government it might be twice as high. Believe it or not, you better put your seatbelt on. There are fewer than 300 agents trying to hunt down millions of illegal aliens. And by the way, the terrorists who attacked us on 9/11, a number of them were visa violators. Now, here's the statistic that you should think about. 7,000 ICE agents, about 3,000 doing immigration work, if we're lucky, and most of them, it seems, are going to be giving employment permission to illegal aliens as a result of the policy decisions of the Obama administration. And now let's contrast those numbers with the New York City Police Department. There are about 35,000 New York City police officers to protect the city of New York and its 8 million residents. Stunning, isn't it? But I have a better number for you. The number of people who work for the TSA, the Transportation Safety Administration, or the Transportation Security Administration, do you realize that those folks who put travelers through the ordeal of being searched and frisked and x-rayed and grabbed by the ankles and shaken until everything falls out of their pockets? And look, let me be honest. I do a lot of traveling. I do a lot of speaking engagements around the country. I've done expert witness work for law firms, so I do a lot of travel. I certainly don't want an airplane that I'm on to be hijacked. I don't want anybody's airplane to be hijacked. But look at what they've done. Guess how many TSA employees there are. And remember, it's not just the TSA. There are also private companies that, in addition to the TSA, are engaged in this project. But TSA has over 60,000 employees, 60,000, nearly twice as many TSA employees as there are police officers for the city of New York. Yet there are fewer than 10% of the number of police officers working for ICE enforcing the immigration laws. Do you see a disconnect here? I mean, this is astonishing. There are over 20 times as many TSA employees checking passengers boarding airplanes as there are ICE agents enforcing the immigration laws for the whole country from within the interior. Now, it's important to protect the airlines. We've seen airplanes used as weapons. It was horrific. As a New Yorker, I had a front row seat. Tragically, to that horrific day. I think all of New York is still suffering post-traumatic stress. So certainly we need to address the issue. But is that the only vulnerability we have? We have illegal aliens working in food processing plants. We don't know who these folks are. Do you see a risk of food being poisoned? You have illegal aliens and people who get residency and citizenship by committing fraud, working as FBI agents, CIA agents, getting in the military. So there are so many vulnerabilities. Think of the Fort Hood massacre. I believe he was probably born in the United States, but we weren't looking at radical Islamist individuals who want to hurt us. And there's nothing wrong with Islam, provided you don't take from any religion the idea that you're justified in doing harm to anybody else because you don't like the way they worship. I'm willing to accept the idea that there are people who are Muslim, who are decent people, want to live their lives peacefully, want their children to grow up and be happy and successful just as everybody else does. But there are radical Muslims out there, and we're not doing enough to stop the nonsense. We're not doing enough to protect our country from violent gangs. We're not doing enough to make certain that it's not just about creating jobs, we could liberate jobs. There are so many aliens holding down jobs that Americans desperately want, but yet Napolitano says, well, those people are, yeah, it's a technicality. Is it a technicality if an illegal alien takes a job that an American needs to prevent his home from going into foreclosure? Is that a technicality, Janet Napolitano? I don't think so. And then I want to call your attention, folks, to a couple of news articles today that absolutely has me torqued. Now, those of you familiar with me know that I'm pretty torqued to begin with very often. But here's an article that just blew my mind today, and it was written by a friend, Kimberly Dvorak, over at the Examiner. And here's the headline: Mexican long-haul trucks take to U.S. highways today and angers the Teamsters. It also angers the independent truck drivers as well, because they believe this could possibly put 100,000 truck drivers out of work. We are going to be allowing Mexican trucks to drive into the United States and clear across the country to New York, Washington, Florida, Maine, Chicago, Seattle, you name it. They will not be licensed by any government agency of the United States. These truck drivers are citizens of Mexico. The trucks are owned by Mexican companies, and the licenses are provided by Mexican governments. So we have foreign truckers driving these 18-wheeler behemoths. I mean, think of the damage a car does in an accident. Now think of the damage an 18-wheeler does in an accident. I mean, this is massive, massive. And yet we will now be having Mexican trucks barreling on our highways. Hopefully they will meet our safety standards, hopefully. Hopefully the drivers will not have been co-opted by the Mexican cartels to deliver weapons or dope or whatever, hopefully. And as they say, hope is not a strategy. So why in the name of anybody with a half a brain would our government at a time like this, when we see more and more encroachment by the Mexican cartels and other criminal and terrorist organizations, want to allow Mexican truck drivers and their trucks unfettered access to our highways and displace American workers? Is this what we need? Another 100,000 hardworking Americans who are the fiber of our country, the backbone of our country, to lose their jobs and increase the potential that these trucks could be used to move contraband, weapons, narcotics, whatever, clear across our country? Absolute madness. But again, in the dead of night last week, Congress signed a new NAFTA agreement, a more free trade, free trade. There's nothing free about this, folks. We, the people, are paying the price for this free trade. So that's another issue that we should be looking at. And then the FBI comes up with a report, and this was just issued today. And here's the headline on the FBI website: The Continuing Gang Threat Latest Assessment Released. And it starts out by saying gangs are expanding, evolving, and posing an increasing threat to U.S. communities. That's the bottom line of the just-released 2011 National Gang Threat Assessment, and it probably doesn't come as a great surprise to anyone who follows the news or is active in their community. And this is right on the front page of the FBI website. This isn't some, you know, newspaper, and you say, oh, some journalist who has a particular orientation wrote those words. Folks, I am reading to you from the FBI website. And the key findings from the 2011 assessment, there are approximately, you better sit down and put your seatbelt on, and maybe don't take, if you're going to drink coffee, it better be decaf. There are approximately 1.4 million active street, prison, and outlaw motorcycle gang members in more than the 33,000 gangs operating in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. Those numbers reflect an increase from the 2009 figures due primarily to more comprehensive reporting from law enforcement and enhanced gang recruiting efforts. In other words, we're getting more accurate statistics, and the gangs are increasing in size. Isn't that great? Gangs are responsible for an average of 48% of the violent crime in most jurisdictions and up to 90% in several others. Gangs are increasingly engaging in non-traditional gang-related crimes like alien smuggling, human trafficking and prostitution, as well as white-collar crimes like counterfeiting, identity theft, and mortgage fraud, primarily due to the high profitability and much lower visibility and risk of detection and punishment than drug and weapons trafficking. Gang members are acquiring high-powered military-style weapons and equipment, which poses a significant threat because of the potential to engage in lethal encounters with law enforcement and citizens alike. Gangs are becoming increasingly adaptable and sophisticated, employing new and advanced technology, including social networking websites, to carry out criminal activities discreetly and connect with other gang members, criminal organizations, and potential recruits around the country and around the world. So now think about that. Now it goes on and says, law enforcement officials nationwide have reported an expansion of African, Asian, Eurasian, Caribbean, and Middle Eastern gangs, the so-called Sereno gangs, the Mexican-American street gang that originated in the barrios of Southern California, were also expanding and faster than other national-level gangs, both geographically and in terms of membership. Those gangs include Marisol Vitrucha, MS-13, the 18th Street, and Florencia 13. So understand what's happening. They talk in this article about gangs along the border. And so we look at what is happening, and you see this influx. These are all ethnic gangs. And, you know, we hear this nonsense. Well, if you want secure borders, obviously you're a terrible person. You have to be a bigot. You have to be anti-immigrant. My goodness gracious, anti-immigrant? Let's be honest about this, folks. Let's be rational. Let's do a little bit of reasoning here. Let's do some critical thinking, something that seems to be frowned upon these days, whether it's in the schools or in the public news media. You know, you watch the news on television and you listen to the news on the radio, and it is rare that they cover these stories. They would sooner give you a recipe for an upside-down, backwards cake that you don't use flour and God knows what you do with it. And that seems to be more of what we see on television news programs than hard news. This is the hard news. That's why I'm here, to try to wake everybody up out there as to how our government has betrayed us in not addressing the threats to our well-being, to the well-being of our nation, to the well-being of our children and their children. That's what's on the line, folks. Everyone is so fixated. Who's winning Dancing with the Stars? Who's going to win the pennant? Who's going to win the World Series? Who's going to win the Super Bowl? Let me tell you who's losing. We, the people, are losing. If you want to call in, by the way, please feel free. My phone number is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. You know, after 9/11, I made my mind up that someone had to go out there and tell it the way it is. And if you look at what ethnic organized crime does, whether it was the Italian mob when they first came to America, the Asian organized crime groups, Flying Dragons, the Ghost Shadows, they would go into Chinatown. They would go into Little Italy. They would go into those neighborhoods where there's lots of immigrants of the same ethnicity, because these are the people they were most comfortable intimidating. They could also do something that nobody else could do, and they still do it. Let me tell you what they do. And this isn't conjecture. This isn't because I did a study. This is because for 30 years, nearly my entire adult life, up until 10 years ago, I was an INS agent. I spent half my career with the Drug Task Force. I worked with the FBI and DEA and ATF and the IRS and the U.S. Marshals Service. And I also work with local and state police and law enforcement organizations from around the world, from Canada, from Great Britain, from Japan, from Israel. I work with all of those law enforcement organizations. And we know what happens. Ethnic criminals target the people within their own communities, and they are able, because they are transnational, they move between borders. They are able to threaten the family members of the immigrants living in America, that if they don't do the bidding of the gang, they will hunt down the father, the mother, the sister, the brother, whoever, back in the home country, and that family member will be made to pay a price if this decent person who's here just going about his or her life, wanting to be left alone, that person now has got to cooperate with the violent gang or wind up losing a parent, losing a sibling, losing a loved one, losing a good friend, because they have their operatives working back in the home country. And it's not only about Mexico. This isn't about Latinos. This nonsense that if you want the border secured, this is about Mexico. No, it's about America, and it's about decency. It's about human dignity. It's about exploitation and violence. That's why I believe these laws are so damn important. So when you're told, well, if you want secure borders and you want to enforce the immigration laws, somehow you're doing terrible things to the immigrants, that's a lot of bunk, and let's clear that up. I have no time for nonsense and mistruths and half-truths and flat-out lies. If we allow these groups to spread across our country, and they are spreading like a cancer, we are putting immigrants as well as our own citizens at risk. This is a betrayal on a stupendous level. There is just no explanation for this, just as there is no explanation for the high-powered weapons that under this ATF so-called investigation, Fast and Furious, made their way into the hands of the cartels. I mean, think back to what that FBI press release said. The gangs are getting their hands on heavy-duty weaponry. You have to wonder how many of those weapons actually came out of Fast and Furious, because the last report I saw said that at least 2,000 guns were permitted to head south into Mexico. And believe me, they're not going to stay there. The Mexican cartel is an organization that's hell-bent on making money. The violence they perpetrate is to make certain that they eliminate the competition. I mean, if you think politics is vicious and filthy, they are nasty. I'll tell you, I wouldn't want anything to do with running for public office. When my Congressman Wiener stepped down because he lived up to his name, people approached me and said, Mike, why don't you run for Congress? And I know some pretty good members of Congress, but there's not enough of them. But my attitude is, no, thank you. I tend to run from Congress, not for Congress. But as vicious and nasty as the campaigns get, look at what the cartels do. They kill people, men, women, children, they don't care, judges, police officers, military officials, doesn't matter, they don't care. They not only kill, they torture, they maim, they dismember bodies, they use bodies as a chalkboard, headless bodies hanging from bridges in Mexico with graffiti sprayed on the body, warning anybody that goes to the police or that deals with a rival gang that it'll be your headless body hanging off the next bridge. So this is what we're dealing with, and that's what's headed this way. They use violence and intimidation, not the threat of violence, but actual God's honest violence, violence that is so gory and so horrific that pages could have been taken out of the Al-Qaeda playbook by these terrorists who were carrying out these vicious crimes in Mexico and elsewhere. And even as an immigration agent years ago, the one thing I did notice was that the foreign criminals from certain countries had a far greater propensity to extreme violence than did American criminals. The Italian mob is vicious. These aren't good guys, let me tell you. But they have certain rules. You don't kill somebody in front of the family. You don't hurt the child. You don't hurt the wife. You don't kill a police officer. They had rules. There were reasons for it. Maybe not altruistic, but that was the game. You didn't do certain things. When you look at MS-13, when you look at the Mexican cartels, when you look at these thugs, there are no rules. Anything goes. The more horrific the violence, the better they like it, because the more they intimidate. And look what's happened in Mexico since the current Mexican president, Felipe Calderon, took office. It's been estimated that 40,000 Mexican citizens, men, women, children, you name them, they're dead. 40,000 have been killed. That's a level of violence that's mind-numbing. And Napolitano says, oh, the borders are secure. How secure is secure enough when the kind of violence that we're talking about plays out on the streets of Mexico daily? Daily. This is not muggings. This is not a chain snatching. We are talking about kidnappings, shootings. It's horrific. It's horrific. And then you listen to the politicians debating and saying, oh, I created more jobs. No, I created more jobs. And they have a food fight over who created more jobs. And meanwhile, in point of fact, the jobs they're probably bragging about are minimum wage jobs. And no one is talking about the idea that if we got rid of the foreign workers who shouldn't be here, that American workers could do well for themselves. And then there's a story about a law firm in New York City that just got taken down. And this law firm was responsible. And I kid you not, you know, sometimes when you read these things, you have to read them twice because you're just not really sure that you got it right. But apparently, this law firm is alleged to have helped a number of people get visas through fraud, immigration benefits via fraud. And guess what that number was? According to the article, this was an ICE press release. Again, this wasn't some, you know, wacky newspaper. This is an ICE press release. And they said that 25,000 aliens were granted lawful status in the country because they went to this law firm and the law firm helped them to commit fraud. Can you imagine that? 25,000 people were given lawful status in the country by fraud. It's staggering. It's staggering. The news release was on the ICE website October 13th, and it's incredible. The attorney was a guy by the name of Earl Seth David, and it's just mind-boggling that 25,000 aliens game the system, and there's nothing in the press release, and this is what galls me and should really work you up, there's nothing in the press release about how immigration authorities are even trying to find those 25,000 people. So think about it. They went to this outfit. They paid them tons of money. They made probably millions of dollars. I mean, by the way, I want to be clear about this. This at this point is an accusation. Maybe Earl Seth David will win his case in court. But I'm telling you that he's been charged with these crimes along with 26 other members of his law firm. And this is staggering. And we know that the terrorists use immigration fraud, visa fraud, benefit fraud to enter the United States and embed themselves in our country. In fact, my very first congressional hearing, I was called to testify by Lamar Smith, who at the time was chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee, and Henry Hyde, the late Henry Hyde, who was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, called upon me to testify in May of 1997, about visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud. And for those of you who don't understand what immigration benefit fraud is, it's the conferring of resident alien status or U.S. citizenship or permission to go to school or some other activity that requires the authorization of immigration is considered an immigration benefit. So we know that the terrorists use immigration fraud and visa fraud to come to the United States, enter our country, hide in plain sight, and then they did so much damage to us. So this is a matter of national security. 25,000 aliens, according to this article, benefited by the crooked dealings of this law firm over a period of years, and there wasn't a single word in the ICE press release about any effort being made to locate those 25,000 and seek to prosecute them, or at least seek to deport them. I guess this was one of those technicalities that Napolitano was talking about. A mere technicality. Oh, yeah, they violated our law, but we really aren't serious about those laws, are we? This is astonishing to me. And then, for those of you who have been following the news, you know, there was a story about how a terrorist suspect, an individual who is a dual national, he's a citizen of the United States and a citizen of Iran, was arrested and charged with plotting to blow up the Israeli and Saudi embassies in Washington and Buenos Aires, possibly. He was working with a relative who's identified as being a member of the Quds, and it's translated from Arabic, so it's either Quds or Qods. And the Quds in Iran is their elite shock troops. Those are their, you know, their tough guys. They are supposedly responsible for all the skullduggery that Iran does. And he had contacted this guy in New York, in Texas, rather, and his name was Mansour Arbabsiar, and said, "You're going to work with me." And he transferred hundreds of thousands of dollars of money to this guy. He went into Mexico, hoping to meet with members of the Mexican cartel to arrange for a hitman to plant a bomb to blow up the ambassador of Saudi Arabia on American soil. Thank God, fortunately for us, in his wanderings, as he attempted to find a member of the cartel, he stumbled upon a guy who turned out to be a cooperator with the FBI. I have no idea, no one has any idea what would have happened if instead of bumping into an informant, if he had actually met a member of the cartel who was willing to carry this out. And there was an interesting report in the newspaper. The Washington Times ran a story, and I did a commentary about it a number of months ago, how right now increasing numbers of Quds troops are now stationed in Venezuela. Now, think about that. You have Latin American soldiers who really aren't Latin American. These are people who were stationed in Venezuela, but in reality, they are citizens of Iran. And that's why I am concerned about that open border. If you have an open border, if you have people in Latin America who are affiliated with terrorist organizations, that has to give us cause for pause. Because if someone lives in Venezuela for 5 or 6 or 8 years, acquires the language, acquires an understanding of the culture, that person could easily pass himself or herself off as being from Latin America when in fact they're from the Middle East. Think about that. We also know that the tri-border region of Brazil, where Brazil meets Argentina and Paraguay, are training camps for terrorist organizations such as Hamas, Hezbollah, and Al-Qaeda. And again, they talked about blowing up the embassy in Buenos Aires. Well, Argentina is one of the countries that shares that border in that tri-border region where we know there are terrorist training camps. So when you start to put all the pieces to this puzzle together, folks, the picture that emerges is a very worrisome picture. We have a wide open border. Now we're going to have trucks easily coming through that border, moving freely on our highways throughout America, from Latin America. We have Quds troops stationed in Latin America. We have the Mexican cartels. We've seen all sorts of folks who are what they call OTM in the Border Patrol, other than Mexican, including people from special interest countries, which means countries that are identified as the state sponsors of terrorism, coming across that border. This isn't just people from Mexico. So when you understand that that border is a threat to national security, is a threat to community safety in terms of the narcotics, you have to say to yourself, what exactly is it that our government is doing to protect our nation and our people if they don't secure the border? And look, it's clear they're not. If they were securing the border, there is no way that the cartels could move their people throughout our country. There's no way they could move their narcotics into every city, because every day those drugs are being sold to the fools out there who use this garbage. Much of the crime in America is directly or indirectly related to the drugs, whether it's the violence perpetrated by the traffickers, whether it's because somebody was higher than a kite and drove his car over some pedestrian, whether it's because somebody committed a violent crime to get the money to satisfy a narcotics addiction. Narcotics is an integral part of the crime problem we face in America. The FBI report makes it clear that the violent gangs from all over the world are an increasing part of the problems that we face in combating crime from all over the world. So the drugs are moving into our country, the criminals are moving into our country, and good old Napolitano says, oh, the borders are secure. Really? The borders are secure? What is the definition of secure? I really would love to have Janet Napolitano explain the definition of secure. I'd like to have Janet Napolitano explain what it is she's saying when she says that illegal aliens are here illegally, but it's just a technicality. They're technically illegal. An alien who runs our border is not technically illegal. The word isn't technical. The word is blatantly illegal. Blatantly. If someone broke into Napolitano's house and was sitting on her sofa when she came home from work, I was going to say a hard day's worth of work, but I forgot I was talking about Napolitano. Well, although I guess writing science fiction maybe taxes her mind a bit. But here's the point. If you are telling me that we have all these criminals coming into America and you're telling us that this is a technicality, how is it a technicality? How is it a technicality when aliens who enter our country from other countries are committing crime in America? Is that a technicality also? And this idea is that if you haven't committed a felony for which you've been convicted, then we're not going to try to get rid of you? Why is that? What is a sleeper agent, by the way? And let me tell you, there have been a number of hearings held in Washington where the FBI has testified about sleeper cells and sleeper agents. A sleeper agent or a sleeper cell isn't just something in a James Bond movie. A sleeper is somebody who comes to this country from another country, whether by running the border or with a visa, sets up shop, keeps a low profile, tries to blend in, hides in plain sight. In the language of the 9/11 Commission, they call that embedding themselves, so that the guy becomes kind of like furniture. You know, oh, here he is again. Oh, I know that guy. I've seen him. He's been living in my neighborhood for 3 years. He's never bothered anybody. The guy that's not bothering anybody is the guy you worry about. Because if you're here illegally and you can somehow acquire lawful status or the appearance of lawful status, you've got a problem. Now, if you noticed in the FBI news release I read to you before, they were talking about identity theft and gangs. Why do you think identity theft is such a problem? Well, let me tell you why. Of course, one of the reasons for committing identity theft is so that you can tap into somebody's bank account or credit card. That makes sense. But there's another issue here. Identity theft enables a bad guy to alter his or her name. Now, many of the names on the various terror watch lists and no-fly lists and so forth are names to which there are no biometrics that are cross-referenced. It might be a name that somebody overheard in a conversation. So now we know that somebody by a particular name is a potential threat to national security, but we don't have the fingerprints. So now what do you do with that? So you post the name and you hope that if the person tries to get on an airplane or tries to do something, you'll find him. So what happens if somebody whose name is on a terror watch list claims to be an illegal alien, gets employment authorization under a different name with this wacky idea that this administration has, which is what happened with the amnesty of 86, by the way. So you wind up with an illegal alien getting an official identity document in a false name. He gets employment authorization, or she gets employment authorization. Well, guess what? That person is now eligible to work in the United States. That person then needs a Social Security card so they can work here. So they get a Social Security card. They can get a driver's license. They can get credit cards, all in a fake name. Remember, undocumented. They can't prove who they are. So that person's real name is on every terror watch list, no-fly list, don't let them in the country list. But what do? They get a new name by walking into immigration and they know their real name might be a problem for them. So they say, my name is Donald Duck. My name is Mickey Mouse. My name is Joe Smith. My name is Bob Jones. And they now have a brand new identity, and they don't have to go to a counterfeiter, although counterfeiting is involved with some of the gangs. All they have to do is go to immigration and make a story up about who they are and why they're here and where they're from. They may even lie about what country they're from. They may say they're from Venezuela when, in fact, they're from Iran. And this is the way our country is doing business today. TSA strip searched some 95-year-old woman several months ago. It made all the headlines. People got worked up about it. You know, I remember I was on a radio program, and we were talking about the TSA searching this 95-year-old grandmother who's terribly ill. I mean, you know, when you're 95, you don't get better. Unfortunately, you just get dead. So here's a woman. I mean, God bless her. 95 is a ripe old age until I guess you get to be 95, and then you would ask for another year, perhaps. There's always unfinished business, you know. So her unfinished business was to visit with some family, perhaps for the very last time. And she must have been all excited, and the family's all excited. You know, grandma's going to get on the airplane and go spend the holiday with her grandchildren or perhaps great-grandchildren. And boy, isn't this great. And TSA decides, no, we got to search her because there seems to be something in her adult diaper. Wow. When I was on that radio show, I said, you know, for the sake of justice, I hope whatever was in that diaper when they started to search her was brown and smelly. I mean, the whole thought of this is so disturbing. I mean, so incredibly disturbing. This does not serve a purpose. I am sorry. This is crazy stuff. And now the TSA is talking about a new program that they want to implement of the frequent traveler program, the trusted traveler. So if you travel lots and lots of times and you've never done anything wrong, they'll put you through a reduced level of scrutiny. Well, if I was a bad guy, you know what that tells me? You got to do a bunch of flights and don't do anything wrong. And sooner or later, you're going to get on that special list. And then no one's really going to look at you all that hard. And that's when you can then do some real damage and bring something on the airplane you shouldn't be bringing with you. I mean, this is crazy stuff, folks. This idea of theater of security doesn't work for me. And I don't think it's working for too many of us any longer. How can we possibly be a secure country when we see more and more gang members coming to America, drugs flowing into America, guns from America flowing into Latin America under the auspices of an alleged official ATF investigation? And let me tell you something. As a member of the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force, I had the pleasure of working with a bunch of ATF agents. I had a desk at the ATF. Ironically, my desk faced the window in the post office directly across the street from the World Trade Center. So when I was up at the ATF squad where I was assigned, my view out my window was that of the World Trade Center. And those agents were highly dedicated. They were dedicated to getting guns off the street. Every time we went out and made an arrest and found some drug dealer and took a firearm out of his house, there was a celebration, not unlike what you'd expect to see in a baseball team when someone hits a home run. Because every time we got a gun off the street, the thought was, we've saved some lives. Now, think about the ATF, and if you've watched any of the hearings, Daryl Issa has been leading the charge, Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa leading the charge in this investigation. Those ATF agents were heartbroken who testified. It took a lot of class and a lot of brass on their part to come forward because they knew, and in fact, a relative, a cousin of Brian Terry, the Border Patrol agent who was shot to death, also testified. And it took guts on his part to come forward because he's an active Secret Service agent. He made it clear that he wasn't testifying as a Secret Service agent, but as a family member. But, you know, there are reprisals in government for whistleblowers. I've been there myself. I testified without the clearance of my agency. Not good. But sometimes you have to stand up because it's what's right. And these ATF agents were heartbroken, especially realizing this business with Brian Terry, and we all know that those guns will undoubtedly, invariably, will kill more people. Guns like this, and the hands of these people are killing machines. And as long as bullets can be found for these weapons, 100 years from now, people are likely to still be dying from some of those guns that our government put out there. So, you know, you look at the totality of this ugly picture. You look at a nation that for decades has refused to secure its borders to satisfy the demands of the wealthy, the corporations, and the folks with big bucks who want to maximize profits at the expense of American citizens. It's mind-numbing. Because, you know, as a rational human being and as a trained investigator, you always look for motivation. And you say, well, why would someone do this? This doesn't make sense. And I have to tell you, I have spent sleepless nights staring up at the ceiling in my bedroom trying to figure out what plausible explanation there could be for Operation Fast and Furious. What plausible explanation there can be for not enforcing the borders even though the risks are so high. And we're talking about our own government making decisions that are not in anyone's best interests, except perhaps for their own, for one reason or another. At some point, this has to stop. If a doctor makes a bad decision, look at the Michael Jackson trial. They're accusing the doctor of acting improperly. He may be facing a jail sentence because Michael Jackson died and is saying it's his fault. There's accountability. 3,000 people died on 9/11. Nobody in the government was punished. Nobody went to jail. Nobody got fired. And that's what's so damn remarkable. A doctor may have made a bad decision. I'm not going to prejudge the case. I don't want to get caught up in that. But the doctor is alleged to have acted improperly. He is on trial because of the death of his patient. He's being made accountable. We've seen this in other cases. If an individual goes out and runs somebody down and he's drunk, he goes on trial for drunk driving. You know, as individuals, we are made accountable. Nobody has been making our government accountable. My hat is off to Senator Grassley, to Senator Collins, to Representative Issa. But where are the rest of the Congress? You know, the Congress is supposed to represent we the people. And I watch the campaigns, and I'm underwhelmed. To see them talk about creating jobs, but nobody talks about liberating jobs. Nobody talks about how the administration is letting these trucks into America today and how many jobs that will cost us, how that will endanger our well-being, whether it's from the perspective of safety on the highway or if it's from the perspective of contraband or bad guys moving freely across our country. Where's the story? Where's the outrage? Where's the news media? The silence is deafening. After 9/11, I made a decision that someone needed to come forward, and that's why I'm here. You know, the First Amendment is a very important part of our Constitution, and the Founding Fathers, wisely, and you could use that word frequently and realizing the brilliance behind what they did, I mean, they were just men. As kids, we're taught American history, I think, the wrong way. You always think of Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and George Washington and John Quincy Adams are statues, larger than life. They were men. They were men. They had toothaches and indigestion and worries about their families. They were men, just as we are men and women today. But they put their heads together. They put their hearts together. They put their common sense together. They put their courage together. And they created this incredible republic, a republic for which so many American men and women have died defending in the military. Law enforcement officers have died protecting communities and upholding the law. And then we have lawmakers. That's what legislators are called, lawmakers, who trip over each other to minimize the importance of the laws of this nation and find ways of blunting those laws. We have an administration, Justice Department, Chief Law Enforcement Officer is the Attorney General, suing states for daring to want to enforce immigration laws. This is not government by the people. Abraham Lincoln thought of this as being government by the people and for the people. How is that for the people? To bring in foreign workers, to supplant American workers. So, I mean, this is all very remarkable. So when you go back to this concept of why we have a country, why we have a constitution, why there are elements in those in the Constitution, I just want you to think about the First Amendment. It doesn't only speak about the right to the free speech and the right of freedom of the press and freedom of religion. Everybody rattles that off almost by rote. But the Constitution, the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights, talks about the right to peaceably assemble. And the idea behind the right to peaceably assemble was that back at the time of the founding of this great nation, if you wanted to have a debate or discourse, the only way you could do it was by being face-to-face with the person that you wanted to have that discussion with. There was no television, there was no telephone, there was no radio, there was no telegraph. There was no Facebook or Twitter. It was just the ability of people to stand together and have those debates, discussions, arguments, whatever. And so what did they say? That the citizens have the right to peaceably assemble. Peaceably assemble. Not to riot, not to rip buildings apart or beat each other up or stab each other. But as Americans, we have the right to peaceably assemble. And back then, they did it under shade trees. They did it in a barn. They assembled peaceably in someone's home, perhaps in a church or a synagogue, perhaps in a school, maybe in a government building, peaceably assembling. And we can still do it today in those same places. But, of course, this is now the 21st century, so we add to it talk radio, the Internet. And this program, and Tom Garcia, who provided me with this incredible opportunity, American Airlines pilot, he'd been unfortunately didn't win, but he'd been a candidate for the Congress from Florida. And he's a former naval aviator, an American hero, a Top Gun instructor, provided me and provides me with this opportunity to get my voice heard. And I do this for a very specific reason, folks. First of all, I want to make a clear point that I'm proud to tell you I am a senior fellow with an organization called CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. CAPS is a very important organization because it's a grassroots operation where they are trying to get the politicians to understand how important it is to secure our borders, enforce our immigration laws, and they've asked me to be a senior fellow with them to provide my insight and expertise to help them get the message out, and that's what I do. And it's not just California. What happened in California is happening across the country. So I would appreciate it if you would visit the CAPS website. I write for them regularly. I also write on my own website, and you probably know it, but it's michaelcutler.net. But the whole point is to educate our fellow Americans. You know, when I write commentaries, I always end my commentaries by saying that democracy is not a spectator sport. Indeed, it's not. Democracy requires participation by the citizens of our nation. I think one of the reasons we are in such deep trouble today, folks, is the result of so many of our fellow Americans who have never voted. And even among those who have voted, how many of you who are out there listening to this program tonight, and I hope there's a lot of you, and I hope that if you like what I have to say, and I will be having guests on the show as often as I can and providing information you're probably not getting anywhere else. I hope you tell your friends and neighbors and encourage them to listen to the program and call in and be a part of it. But how many of us haven't called ever a member of Congress, a senator, a representative, or a governor's office, a mayor's office, a city councilman's office? See, we can't sit back and not try to get our voices heard because these folks are our elected representatives. And this begs the obvious question. How can they represent us if they don't know what we want? When we go to a restaurant, we are very specific about the food that we want to eat. We don't go to a restaurant, and for those of you old enough to remember Johnny Carson, we don't play the Mighty Karnak routine and hold the menu to the head and say to the waiter or waitress, guess what I want, and hope that they will bring out the food you want to eat. We're very specific. Well, you know what, folks? We have an obligation as Americans to be just as specific with our demands, with our elected representatives. We need to educate ourselves about the issues, and then we need to tell our elected representatives in no uncertain terms what it is we expect of them so that they truly represent us, we the people. That's our obligation. I have mixed feelings about the folks that are demonstrating occupying Wall Street. Certainly, I'm sure there's a lot of professional agitators out there, and I worry who may rise up and take a leadership role, because whenever you have that much energy and that many people, you have to worry about such things. But the fundamental idea, as long as the people are respectful and peaceable, and I've heard some horror stories, and I certainly don't agree or condone any of that nonsense, but if you can, in a peaceful, nonviolent, respectful, and responsible fashion, demonstrate to get your voices and your concerns heard, well, in my view, that's as American as apple pie. Not to, as we've seen stories, defecate on police cars or do crazy stuff. That's just dead wrong, and it just takes away any credibility you might have. But going out there to be heard, to get the attention of the media, to get the attention of elected representatives and say, hey, listen, you're failing us. You've taken from me my opportunity to be a participant in the American dream. I just want you to think about this. I wrote a commentary for CAPS where I said Ellis Island and other myths. I made the point that, yes, America was built by immigrants, but not simply by having millions of people come across the border and saying, here we are. We were careful who we let in. That's why Ellis Island was a quarantine station. And then through our rights guaranteed to us through our Constitution and this system of free enterprise, where if you worked hard and acquired skills or an education or had a bright idea and went and followed up on those ideas, people like Steve Jobs, whose passing has been reported all over the news, and they had a wonderful story on the Mythbusters about him, and if you get a chance, I suggest you watch it. And he talked about how you should not live someone else's life, and he noted how we're here for a limited time, and he said to remain hungry and foolish, because I think when you try to start out on your own and do things, people think you're foolish. Certainly, he may have had that happen with him, but at the end of the day, look at his great successes. You know, we used to say in America that you build a better mousetrap, the world will be the path to your door. We don't even hear that anymore. Today, it's you got to be in it to win it. You know, it's all about lottery tickets and lawsuits. We've got to go back to basics, folks. We've got to go back to being the innovators, to valuing education, and to making certain that the politicians hear from us. Because the silence, folks, has been deafening. And if you think, well, I'm just one person, go to the park. Look at those statues of somebody on a horseback. That statue was erected to commemorate a difference that that person made at a moment in history. Because when you look throughout history, change wasn't brought about by millions and millions of people. Change very often was brought about by a handful of people who had vision and who had the guts to come forward. We're in need of leadership in America today. And we're in need of Americans to demand leadership from our government. If you're not involved, then you are getting the government you deserve. But those of us who are involved deserve far better. So I urge all of you who are hearing my program tonight, please get involved. Please make your voices heard, not just once, but regularly. Make enough phone calls that your elected representatives recognize your voice, where they say, oh, gosh, here we go again. But that's okay. That's okay. This isn't about winning friends. This is about influencing Congress. The campaign contributions are about winning votes. The votes that we cast are the votes that count if we get involved, if we get our voices heard, if we are diligent, if we live up to our obligations, and if in so doing we pay respect and we demonstrate our commitment to the valor of our soldiers. They're putting their lives on the line for us so that we have this magnificent country, and they've been doing it since the founding of this nation. The least we can do, folks, is to be the best citizens that we can be, and that requires participation by the citizens. democracy most certainly is not a spectator sport. I thank you for spending the last hour or so with me. I hope you found it interesting, informative. I hope you will join me again next week. But no matter what, please tell your friends and neighbors, and hope to speak with you next week. Have a good weekend, everybody. Take care. So long.